Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
COVID isn't going away anytime soon, and neither is our nation's disastrous healthcare system. The U.S. had more cases last week than India has had ever. The U.S. had more cases daily since the election than China has had ever. And each state has more cases than the country of Vietnam has had ever. The richest country on earth is completely incapable of addressing a pandemic proactively. Our best hope is an effective vaccine.
The only way we can cure this is through herd immunity, and we know that there's only two ways to get that. Everybody gets sick, or we get a vaccine. So this whole episode is going to be on vaccine and why it needs to be centrally planned. And this is a premise of the show and our belief system, which is that centralized planning is what's going to save the world and save the United States, or who gives a shit about the United States, but save the world and save the workers, save everybody. We're all meant to believe that having a healthy competition will lead to innovation. And that's all bullshit. It doesn't mean that Pfizer or the other companies are going to go out of their way to fight to get the best cure. They're going to fight to be the first market and fight to be just good enough, just enough to get approved by the FDA. Which means that all these companies just seem to be wasting all of our time, because in the end, they're just wasting resources, not only through, you know, advertisement and all the FDA requirements and fulfillments, but also with redundancy and duplication of efforts and targeting the wrong motive. They're motivated by profits and trying to be the number one supplier in the world and not necessarily curing the disease outright. And you see that with just how fast they're moving to get this done. And the same thing with scaling up everything. So we have all these labs doing all this work, and then we have, you know, 16 different formulations that are coming out, but at the end they have to manufacture. So we have every one of these manufacturers going to have redundant capital, right? Redundant batch operations. Everything's going to be redundant. And that means that we're not going to have the best vaccine out in the world. It also means that we're going to have competing vaccines for us to be getting pigs on to see which one's actually better. Because it may turn out that company A vaccine is better than company B, but company B vaccine was more readily available than company A because company A took longer to scale it up. Meaning in the end that people that got company B's may get sicker faster and longer and not actually be cured of it. And this all happens because of this nonsensical idea that together, under capitalism, healthy competition breeds the best results.
So the entire vaccine ecosystem is premised on all sorts of false incentives that are derived from capitalism. You mentioned the company A, company B example. It is entirely likely that the vaccine that everybody gets in the United States is actually an inferior vaccine. And this can occur for a number of reasons. The example you just talked about was just purely a distribution method. The vaccine that is going to be the easiest to distribute will probably become the prevalent vaccine, but that doesn't mean it's the best. So Pfizer came out recently and talked about how effective their vaccine was, and everybody got all excited. And then there's some concern that it has to be stored at negative 70 degrees Celsius, which is cold-ish. There's going to be some distribution challenges to that. Like, I don't have a fridge that stores stuff at negative 70. Obviously, I'm not distributing vaccines, but there will need to be a lineage of distribution networks set up that have this ability to store stuff at negative 70 degrees Celsius. And it might not be necessary because some other vaccine has different properties that doesn't require it to be stored at negative 70 degrees. But if Pfizer's vaccine is first, we're going to rapidly scale up to have all these freezers along the way, and then we're going to start distributing the vaccine, and then there'll be sunk costs associated with that, and then maybe another vaccine comes out in 2 months, and it's way easier to distribute, and it's better, and it's shelf-stable, and it's like a pill or something instead of an injectable. But we've already wasted resources along the way, so now we're stuck getting the Pfizer vaccine because we've already invested in all this freezer space.
Just for relative nature, like your household freezer gets to 0 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not close to the minus 94 Fahrenheit that Pfizer needs for their vaccine. And there's not many hospitals and pharmacies that have that cold of temperature, because the flu vaccine is stable around freezing. Almost every vaccine is closer to zero than it is to minus 70. And this is the part that goes along with the infrastructure, because who's going to make these fridges? How many of these are actually available on the market? Are we going to centrally plan to manufacture them, or are we going to allow capitalism to decide what the best freezer is? Right. At that point in time, then companies may then divert resources that are needed for other things in the medical field in order to profit on these, you know, higher end freezers, which serve no purpose except for to rush through a vaccine. Now, we're not arguing that a vaccine is not needed. We're saying it is. But capitalism has now, with all the propaganda, pumped up a 90% effective vaccination into the marketplace. And that's Pfizer, which then means that'll be what's on the mind of every citizen. There's probably 13 other ones. There's propaganda, too, against other countries, because we want a U.S. company to make our drugs. You know, we've already seen negative propaganda against the Russian and the Chinese drugs, right, which could possibly be more effective. It could be more stable. It could be a better overall vaccine. But because there is a fear-mongering, there's a hatred of those countries, there's all these things that go against, you know, basically centralized planning a drug, all the propaganda ends up hurting us in the long run, because now we are a nationalist company, your country. We only want a U.S. company. We only want, you know, the best and the biggest names. You only want Pfizer because that's like the number one drug company or whatever it is, right? It's purely propaganda that's trying to solve the vaccination issue, purely capitalism, and that is what the issue. That's going to hurt us in the long run.
Are you looking forward to the various different drug companies having COVID vaccine commercials with like weird names and highly produced songs and artsy graphics and all that good stuff that you'll listen to and literally have no remembrance of them, but they'll cost like $400 million?
Yeah, would they spend more on the commercial than do on the actual development work? Yeah.
And it's all in an effort to get certain doctors to prescribe certain vaccines over another, just based on pure propaganda, which adds absolutely no value to the vaccine effort.
Right. It's illegal for doctors to take money, I guess, from, you know, those companies, but is it illegal for them to have a lunch and learn where they get, you know, brought in catered food and get swag thrown out to them, you know, an industry standard t-shirt and pen and pencil and gift card to this favorite thing? Is it, you know, if Pfizer holds a national retreat in Hawaii and all the doctors get it paid for because it's important that they go and learn about Pfizer's new drugs? I mean, that's all what happens under capitalism, right? The cost of your prescription drug means it's the cost of the executives and the marketing team and the sales team all going out and trying to sell the drug that it is for them to develop it, right? It's just purely wasted money, all for capitalism.
Another issue with the vaccine is that you have Pfizer, giant megacorp, one of the big drug companies. And there's a couple big drug companies. And they have their idea about what a vaccine is. I'm not going to pretend to know the intricacies of vaccine design. But each company appears to be charting its sort of own path based on its own expertise and some historical research that they've been doing related to SARS and MERS previously. But because a lot of the inertia is based on just a capital footprint of Pfizer is a giant company, they're able to get funding from the government, they're able to get resources to do a vaccine. We as a sort of a country, as a nationalist country, are not potentially exploring different avenues of potential vaccine research. So smaller companies might have ideas about a vaccine, and you know, it's an idea. It's a dart on the board. And if they didn't have a profit motive, you could explore some of these different alternatives without having to make everything commercially viable. And in a centrally planned state, because it's centrally planned, that doesn't mean there isn't competition or different areas of investigation. So kind of a classic example of a centrally planned project would be the Manhattan Project, where the U.S. decided they were going to infinitely fund the creation of a atomic weapon. And within that project, you better believe there were different areas of research. You know, multiple different teams went down different paths. They determined that one path was viable while another team determined another path wasn't viable. That was centrally planned, but there was still competition. Different areas were explored. In the current vaccine wars, those alternate paths are not being explored because there isn't a profit motive. You have to choose the path that is most likely to bear commercialization and profit motive for your investors.
The fastest, right? First to market.
Yeah.
That's the important part, right?
Yep. All of these corporations, they have to optimize the resource allocation to yield the best potential outcome for themselves, not the potential best outcome collectively.
There it is.
So having Pfizer research one area and failing, but having another team or another company research a different area and succeeding is a net positive for society. But that cannot happen with profit motive because both companies have a need to succeed.
There is no room for shared glory, right? Only one person can walk out of the Thunderdome. That's the way it is.
There can only be one Highlander.
And any type of belief system that there can be more than one is bullshit. There is no way in capitalism, especially when you have all of these things like, you know, shareholders and other pieces of shit like that, you know, that you can have more than one winner. Again, it's not because we share the profits. It's not like in the military contracts, which is always a shitty example, where they have more than one supplier to make sure the supply chain isn't destroyed, right? You have more than one ammunition vendor. This is where you have one vendor because capitalism is not under contract. The government is not buying the vaccines. You are. So there is no guaranteed money for any of these companies. And that's the issue with capitalism. Under a centralized plan tenant, basically the government is going to buy everybody's vaccine. Any company that can make it should be allowed to make it, and then they'd all make money from it. But because it's a race to the cure, but for profits, race to the profitable cure, right? We don't see that same incentive. In a rambly way, capitalism screws you over because everybody's trying to make money off of your suffering.
Yeah, we're racing to the profitable cure, not the most efficient or fast or best or most readily distributable cure. It's the profitable cure.
And that's the takeaway here, is that nobody gives a shit about if you live or not, right? Nobody cares, at least in the capitalist sense. I do. I care that you live or die, but the capitalists don't care.
So capitalism doesn't care whether you live or die, and the entire healthcare system of the U.S. is set up to be profitable. And this is based on optimizing resource allocation. And in the healthcare hospital clinic, personal access to medical care context, companies want to have as little unused equipment and rooms and resources as possible because unused equipment is lost profit. So this leads to the situation we're sort of currently in now with COVID, which is hospital utilization is exceeding current capacity, which is going to be a hindrance to corporate profits because corporations would be glad to have extra rooms so they could take in all these COVID people, but they can't snap their fingers and have there be an extra hospital wing. So this isn't great for hospitals from a pure profit motive context because they have customers. There is demand that they cannot provide a service in exchange for money for. But from the end user as a human being, this also causes a stress on the healthcare system. And this is obviously being manifested because people with COVID don't have access to healthcare. So this is both bad for capital and it's bad for individual humans. So the healthcare system is stressed and it's bad for everybody. So the system is failing. This is also affecting some supply chains where you can't get access to certain drugs because certain ingredients are used for other drugs and there's kind of a ripple effect. So you have this situation where a doctor wants to prescribe a patient with X, but X isn't available. So they have to settle for sort of an alternative and that alternative might be less effective. So that's another example of how the stress of the healthcare system is negatively impacting patient care, but it's ultimately at the end of the day affecting corporate profits.
Absolutely. And I like the example of the stress in the system because it's not just, you know, the COVID cases, it's also the COVID with underlying conditions. And it's the underlying conditions that are being hammered right now. Or it's the influx of individuals who, because they had to wait in April, May, June, July, seek care, they're now being thrown back at the hospitals for care when they think it was a downtime for COVID. So again, it goes back to that just in time. No one's holding inventory. So now the patient still can't get the care they need because you can't get the appointments that you wanted. You can't get the elective surgeries that you need to, right? And the best part is that December 31st, your deductibles are reset, baby. So if you thought you were going to get your elective knee surgery this year, nope, you get to pay more into the healthcare next year and get it again. So again, the whole supply chain is designed for profit motives. It makes absolutely no sense to have resets at the beginning of each year. It makes absolutely no sense to have elected, you know, they have to pay for healthcare in general. But I mean, a lot of the system is designed to have the house win, right? Every single time. And we're seeing this time and time again. We're hearing all these horror stories again as we're getting, you know, I don't know, massive spike in COVID. And we hate having the podcast only about COVID, but it's a shitty example of what capitalism does. And under COVID, it has been the best time to really analyze how society reacts to stresses. And every single part of society that's affected by COVID is now under stress, and it's directly caused by capital.
When we talk about the stress might not be as prevalent if the system was designed to be efficient, but it's not. It's designed to be profitable. As the healthcare system becomes stressed, scarcity begins to be a greater issue, and that leads to a multiplication effect for some of the inefficiencies already present within the system. From a high level, healthcare is the application of scarce resources, and for the most part, it's weighing proactive measures versus reactive measures. And proactive measures are much more efficient. They generate less stress on the system, but they're oftentimes less profitable. So as the system becomes stressed, proactive measures are declining. People aren't going to get their physical. People aren't going to the dentist to get their teeth cleanings. Those are proactive measures. They're not happening. But people are going to the dentist because they have a chipped tooth or a root canal or a cavity and it's starting to hurt. So that's creating additional stress on the system and leading to inefficiencies and leading to greater cost. So if you have an acute illness, you go to one doctor, they give you an x-ray. They look at it and they go, oh, nope, it's this other thing. They refer you to another doctor. You go to that other doctor and they look at it and they go, yep, you need an x-ray. Well, actually, no, that isn't the case. They send you to another doctor, you get an MRI, another doctor, you get an ultrasound. You've gone to four different doctors. You've gotten four different procedures done. All you've done is clog up the system, and you still don't really know what your diagnosis is. Why couldn't the proactive answer be to maybe get the ultrasound first? It's readily accessible. It's super safe. Why does there have to be four different buckets of different tests that you have to go through? And the answer is profit motive. Every referral you can bill the insurance for, each clinic rakes a little bit of money off of each referral. They don't really care how efficient the system is, because at the end of the day, it's sort of just moving money around from A to B. You have health insurance, so you don't necessarily even see it. But it's inefficient going to each one of those four buckets. A proactive example would be to just have everybody get a full body MRI twice a year. You don't even like go to a doctor. You just go lay down in a tube for 20 minutes. Your data gets sent to a doctor who looks at it, and they literally can see pretty much anything that may or may not be wrong with you. That's proactive. It would be super cheap relative to our current system of sending every person to get four different clinics to get four different imaging scans.
It's the idea of, like you said before, about, you know, proactive versus reactive, right? And the whole healthcare industry is designed, like you're saying, about to be reactive. Oh, you have a boo-boo? Here, let's spend $20,000 determining if it's a boo-boo, right? What that boo-boo is. Instead of it going, well, let's check you for cancer once a year. It's, oh, you have stage four cancer? And we know that because your pancreas is on fire? Sorry, you're going to die now. And having access to affordable healthcare is what the neoliberals will want to say to you. And I had to say it that way because it's almost like propaganda, where you're going to say, I want access to affordable healthcare. And in the end, what you really want is you want access to healthcare. And in fact, it's not even access. You want the right to go see a doctor when you want to go see a doctor. And when you have systems designed to have minimum costs, minimal staffing, minimal capital, know everything on the shelves, just designed purely for profit, you end up breaking down anytime you try to add anything extra to the system.
We talked about this in the mask episode, how you can't just spin up a brand new, you know, line for N95 masks. You probably can't spin up a brand new hospital overnight. But what you can do is we can move ourselves away from profit-driven medical to a purely holistic, patient-first mentality, which is everybody gets the care that they not need, but that allows them to thrive. Not survive, thrive. And this is a big, big change on what it means to have a actual working healthcare system.
And part of that involves treating healthcare workers not as commoditized profit generators.
What do you mean?
They're essential workers.
Oh, okay. They're not slaves.
They're essential to our profits.
That's right. The system that's designed to exploit the insured is also, and this is weird, designed to exploit the worker in every single way it can. And we see this from the way that we pay out benefits, to the way that, you know, sometimes the hospital staff has worse benefits than for-profits have, which is, to me, just nuts. Anyway, long story short, the whole system is designed to exploit for margins. And right now under COVID, we talk about being stressed. We talk about the market stressing everything out. But it's also stressing out the workers. And every single time we talk about, you know, COVID-19 response and how we've had a record number of days, we seem to forget in the media that that means there has to be a record number of individuals in the hospitals working on the front lines, making sure that they can wear their masks, don't die.
So when you see on the news that there's this line that keeps going up with the number of cases, you should think about how what that line really represents is the number of people being exploited by profit motives. So we have cases going up, we have deaths going up, and we have workers being exploited going up.
As pointed out time and time again, a centrally planned healthcare system is the only viable system that can provide optimal care for patients. It's also the only system that can create a livable wage for workers. Because we can decommoditize food and medical, all the things necessary right now in capital. So really, a centralized system is the only way that we can transition to something that's fair to the workers. This means we have to have Medicare for all first. It's our stepping stone. We must have this in place in order for us to transition to a healthcare system that is fair to everybody.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.